This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Points with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now, your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G. George Ribolino.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 4 of your home for everything sports, Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I am Scott Criscolo. A beautiful spring day here in the Northeast, finally. Actually, it was the first beautiful weekend of the year. I think winter finally we kicked its ass out the door here in this part of the country. Joining me as always is Old Man Winter's best friend because he loves snow and he's going to be lonely without it. The Doctor of Shoveling. George Ribolino.
Oh, I don't even want to hear those words anymore.
Oh, it's shoveling so your driveway sucks too.
It does. My driveway does suck. It's deceiving looking too. It doesn't look like it's big, but when you're shoveling it,
and then
boy,
it's got that hump in the middle. It's a pain in the ass, but it's always good to talk to you, Doctor. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, it's baseball season. It's kind of a couple weeks into the season.
Yep.
You know, getting psyched up about that. You know, college basketball's ended. You know, Connecticut, UConn, the men and the women won the championships.
Yes,
here
did.
In Connecticut.
We'll
I mean, I'm not a UConn fan like you guys are. I mean, I'm not from Connecticut originally, but, you know, it was exciting. I mean, I don't get why these idiots burn their campus, but
I don't get that either. I may, if I remember, I don't want to piss them off, but I may ask him about that. Coming up on the show tonight, we'll be joined by my brother, Chris Criscolo, Place to Be Nation basketball analyst, to talk about the season, talk about his Huskies winning the whole thing. First time he'll be on a show other than the Place to Be podcast. Of course, he's been on all 4 of our March Madness specials dating back to 2011. And we'll talk about the Masters because that ended today. And Bubba Watson wins his second green jacket in 3 years. And maybe we'll talk a little about that as well. Then later on, we'll be joined by Todd Gessling, who he's been on before. We love the guy. He's a college football junkie. He's a college sports junkie, but he also is Place to Be Nation's hockey analyst. And we'll talk the Stanley Cup playoffs, which will begin this week in earnest as the regular season, Dr. G, ended today. Your Devils beat my Bruins today 3-2. Not that it really matters, but a win's a win. And the playoffs will start Wednesday with games. I think the Bruins start Friday night against Detroit. Ugh, game that series freaks me out. We'll talk a little college hoops with him as well. And then, of course, you'll give your prescription, something that pisses you off, and go on a rant at the end of the show.
Many things piss me off.
A lot of things piss you off.
It's a very easy thing.
Public customer service. I think I might want to have a show, a combo show of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point and the Place to Be podcast where you and Justin Rosero can bitch about customer service and human beings in general. I think that'd be a great show. What do you think?
I think so, because we usually – on that, at least, we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. He hates crappy drivers, although we're from New England. All drivers suck.
You know, sometimes he and I, even though we're both Yankee fans, we're not always on the same page sometimes. He's got a little bit more of a new way of thinking sometimes than I do, but at least we root for the same team. But definitely when it comes to the customer service thing, we're definitely on the same page there.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, you know, one thing I have to say – you're just starting to feel that spring fever now, you know, you're starting to get into like,
yes,
you know, the baseball season's beginning. You got the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs will be kicking into gear soon. It's just great time of the year, busy time of the year. I get psyched up. I really do. This is my favorite time of the year.
Mm. Now,
I love football too. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We love everything. That's why we do this show, because we love everything. It just depends on what we talk about. We don't have much to talk about for football. We will have a draft special coming up in a few weeks. Probably have Andy Flanagan and our man Roger Morissette on. Oh, speaking of Roger, shucks. I just realized we need to do we'll be doing a MMA update in a little while. I just realized that. All right. Let's talk a little NBA before we get into baseball. that regular season is not quite over yet. Close, though. I think it ends next Sunday. I think they're a week further than the NHL is. And at the moment, it is the Indiana Pacers that are the number one team in the East. Right now, at the moment, they have a half-game lead over Miami. Chicago, Toronto, Brooklyn, Washington, Charlotte, Atlanta rounded out. It is official. Yes, the New York Knicks are not making the playoffs. Wow.
Yeah, baby.
What a shock.
I'm very excited as a Brooklyn Nets fan, baby.
Yes. Nets made a great run.
I gotta egg on people. You know that. I can't wait. You know what? I want people to write us.
Yes, we do have a website. Thank you. Good segue, Dr. G. You just reminded me. Extra point at placetobenation.com. Send us your comments. If you have a question for the doctor, if you have a future prescription you want him to fill, please. If you have topics you want us to discuss, anything. What you think of the show?
Even if you want to say, Dr. G, stop making fun of my Red Sox or stop making fun of my
you're not gonna listen to them anyway.
So. No, Rangers or Knicks or whatever other team I hate. Pretty much I hate every team except the team. But that's besides the point. Nah. You know, I mean, honestly, I just love watching the New York Knicks franchise struggle. I always have. I can't stand the Dolans. I can't stand what they stand for. So I kind of enjoy it. And I'm really, really excited about the Nets this year. This is the year, though. Do I really think they have enough to win the East? Probably not. But you know what? They're getting everybody. You know, Garnett's had some injuries this year, so he hasn't, you know, played a lot lately. So maybe he has some fresh legs. And, you know, I really I like the job that Jason Kidd did. I think, you know, everybody was criticizing when he got rid of Lawrence Frank. And, you know, he struggled in the beginning of the season, had to get, you know, his legs under him. But since January 1st, you can't complain with the job that he's done as coach this year. And you know, one thing, you know, that's one thing that the New York Knicks missed. They missed his leadership last year. Yeah, he may not have had a great season, but his leadership alone had that club, you know, that clubhouse playing, you know, in heart, you know, kind of kept everybody step together. Somebody that's a leader. I don't think Carmelo Anthony is a true leader. And I think, you know, we'll see what Phil Jackson's going to be able to do for that Knicks team. But I don't know. He's a great coach. Doesn't mean it's going to translate into being a great.
Right. Well, they're not going to be able to do much this year because they have no draft picks. They got nothing. So, yeah, I mean, they traded their best pick to the Nuggets when they got Melo, and I don't think they have a second round pick either. So, if the playoffs started today, Indiana would play Atlanta. The Hawks clinch the 8th seed. Miami, Charlotte. Chicago, Washington. How about the job the Wizards have done this year? John Wall's finally coming into his own. Good job by the Wizards. They're going to finish above 500, so good for them. And your Brooklyn Nets are going to take on Toronto, the Raptors, who I can't believe finished the 4th seed. Another great job by another team. At the moment,
they've had a tough time with Toronto this year, the Nets.
Yeah, at the moment, the team that will end up having the most ping pong balls for the lottery is the 15-65 Milwaukee Bucks. Let me tell you something. They're the opposite end of the spectrum is the Milwaukee's baseball team, which we'll get into in a couple minutes. But Milwaukee has the worst record in the league. They have a worse record still than the Sixers, who had that 20-something game losing streak. As of the way you and I are talking now, the Bucks are 15-65, and the Sixers are 17-63.
Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy. They're 9-31 at home. Ugh, brutal. In the West, we still have one playoff spot left to be decided. The 8th spot at the moment belongs to Memphis. The Grizzlies have a half-game lead over Phoenix. That's pretty much it. Minnesota's too far out of it now. So that'll be decided this week. But 1-7 is set. San Antonio, which looks like will be the only team to finish the year with 60 wins. God, tipping the fountain of youth, San Antonio. I mean, they're like the Devils were in the 2000s. You keep thinking they're getting older and older, and they keep winning and winning and winning.
They're a great organization.
Well, Greg Popovich is easily one of the greatest coaches ever. I don't think anybody can deny that.
I agree.
So they're the one. Then Oklahoma City 2, the Clippers 3. Houston 4, Portland 5, Golden State 6. I love Mark Jackson in Golden State. Dallas at 7, and then at the moment, Memphis is at 8. They're a half game ahead of Phoenix. Now, speaking of Phil Jackson, Dr. G, we were talking about the Knicks a minute ago.
Right.
Mike Woodson's not sticking around. There's not any doubt about that.
No, there's no doubt about it.
Do you think who would be a good coach? I love Brian Shaw, and I knew, and I know he's in Denver, and I kind of alluded that he wasn't on when we last talked to NBA. I know he's in Denver, but Phil Jackson could poach anybody he wants. I could see him wanting – I mean, Phil Jackson, not Mark Jackson. But I have Mark Jackson on my mind because there's another guy I think Phil would like as coach of the Knicks. And as much as Mark Jackson's doing an unbelievable job with the Warriors, they got 3 games left. They could win 50 games. They're 49-30 at the moment. I like them going to the cup finals, the NBA finals. I mean, could they could easily – the Knicks could poach any of these coaches. What are your thoughts on what do you think Phil's going to do? You think he'll take one of these guys that, you know, that already has a job? Is he going to – he's not going to keep Mike. You know, he keeps Mike Woodson, I'll be stunned.
I think Woodson's gone. It's funny because the reason why he was brought in because D'Antoni lost, you know, the club was – his words were falling on deaf ears, and now the same thing happened with Woodson. Seemed to regain it a little bit once Jackson got hired. It seemed like there was a little bit more juice for the team. But I think by him not making the playoffs made Phil Jackson's his decision easier. Sorry. So I think that's going to be a key thing there. I don't know who he's going to go. I mean, obviously Brian Shaw is one of the, what I like to see. I mean, like I said, I'm not a Knicks fan, but for Knicks fans and nostalgia purposes, a guy who's paid his dues, seeing like Patrick Ewing, mm-hmm. Because you're not going to go anywhere next year. So it gives him a chance to grow into the position. Listen, the Nets took a chance with a team that they tried to stack. With a young coach, but I mean, he's young, but, a new coach, a guy who's never coached before. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Jason Kidd didn't even have assistant coaching experience. Whereas, you know, Patrick Ewing, what is it? 7-8 seasons he's been an assistant coach now. Mm-hmm. He's paid his dues. I'd like to see that. Now, the only thing is that, you know, it's so tough, and, you know, it's one thing I was always saying, you know, I was very upset when Don Mattingly didn't get the Yankees job. But then I look at it like, you know, he's never been criticized really in New York. I mean, for the most part, you know, 99% of his career, he's been beloved here. To see him now being criticized, yeah. I don't know, I might have had a hard time. And even myself criticizing for moves he made, that might have been a tough thing. And that might be a tough thing for Knicks fans. Because he is so beloved that that might be tough,
right?
A tough role, but if you want for juice and for headlines, that would be a nice pick. Because I think Patrick Ewing could be a good coach. I really do.
I think he can too.
I think he's done a great job as an assistant coach. He's very well respected in the league.
To hell with the Knicks. I'd like to see him replace Little John at Georgetown. I don't even care about going to the Knicks. I'd like to see him replace.
That's a possibility.
I'd kill
well.
For that. Oh my God, that would be incredible. I love Little John, and I meant to mention that. And we'll maybe if I have time, we'll talk about it with my brother in the next segment. But if not, down the line. Little John I think he's worn out as welcome. I think the whole Thompson family bloodline needs to end, and Georgetown needs to just think about getting better. And they had a terrible year this year, and they got to the postseason. They won a game, and then they lost in the second round of the NIT to Florida State, but they need a change as well. So if Patrick doesn't go to the Knicks, I'd love to see him as the next coach at Georgetown. I think coaching a college team would be good for Patrick, and I think it would help Georgetown's image too.
They need
to be tough again, but
that would be my pick to see for the Knicks. But I think he's probably going to go with maybe like a Brian Shaw or Mark Jackson would be a great pickup if they could get him. But
right.
You know, if I think he could go far in the playoffs this year. I think, I think he's probably going to be more inclined to stay with a team that actually has a future. I just don't see one for the Knicks for a few seasons.
Oh, I don't either. Looking at the schedule, just to let you know, right now Memphis is playing the Lakers out in L.A., who are not making the playoffs because they stink. But I didn't really care about the Lakers this year because it was all about lowering the cap. Lakers are going to be back to gangbusters next season once they start spending some money.
Do you think D'Antoni's staying?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, there'll be a new coach in L.A. There'll be new coaches.
Man.
And I can't remember the last time. I can't remember the last time that there were coaches debuting for the Knicks and Lakers in the same season. That's pretty incredible. But they're trailing by four right now. But the big game for them is tomorrow night. Tomorrow night may do it. Memphis goes to Phoenix to play the Suns on Monday night, the 14th. And if you're listening to our show after that game, then you'll already know who won, and that may decide who the 8 seed is in the West. So we still got a week's left, and we'll talk more about the NBA on our next show. Maybe we'll get Andrew Reich on to talk about the NBA playoffs, which will be kind of in full force at that point, but we'll talk about it anyway. Baseball season started 2 weeks ago. Of course, we had our awesome MLB preview, which if you haven't heard yet, myself, the doctor, and Place to Be Nation Extra Point baseball analyst Joel Barnhart. We did a great great preview special. He'll be back on our next show in a couple weeks to talk baseball. Early on this season, Dr. G, anything stand out for you? The mediocrity in the divisions. Really the only standout team I've noticed right now is the Brewers, who were 10-2. Everybody else is pretty much kind of middle of the road.
I honestly didn't expect that from the Brewers. I would say that's probably my biggest surprise.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Obviously, they're getting a good mixture of hitting and pitching. Ryan Braun's kind of put his past steroids, allegations, and transgressions, whatever you want to call it, his guiltiness aside, and he's actually been getting some, you know, at least at home, he got, you know, a couple standing ovations and, you know, people are willing to, you know, give him another shot, at least in Milwaukee anyway. He gets booed around the league. And they really, you know, they swept the Red Sox at home, at Fenway, which is not an easy thing to do. And I know that being a Yankee fan. So I definitely, you got to like the way the Brewers are playing. You know, got some freak injuries, you know, a lot of muscle pulls. I mean, now, I'm Derek Jeter just was sat down for the last couple of games, with a sore quad, Teixeira's on the DL, hamstring, and you're just hearing a lot about that around the league. I'm just more, you know, obviously locally with the Yankees, that's, you know, some of the stuff going around. But the AL East is the AL East. Everybody's kind of beating up on each other, kind of thing. I don't, you know, nothing. Nothing spectacular coming out of there yet. In the NL East, I know that you guys, as a Mets fan, I mean, it looked like a little bleak there, starting 0-3, and then they come back and win two series in a row. I still like the Nationals out of that division. Nationals, their pitchers, boy, they could rack up the strikeouts. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and they're hitting the ball. Like you said, 57 runs so far in 12 games. It's pretty impressive. And they've only given up 29. So they're definitely – it's a good balance. I don't know how long this will last. Remember the year in the 80 – I forgot what year it was, 88 or 89. They started 17-0 and, you know, they lost like 90 games. So we'll see how long this goes. You still got St. Louis. The Reds have struggled. They've lost 8. I mean, I was glowing for them on our preview show, and they've lost 8 of their first 12, but I think that's also gonna change. Atlanta,
it's a long season. Teams will get hot. They'll have their tough periods of time. Home runs seem to be down a little bit this year again. I think the testing definitely is helping with that. You're starting to see, you know, some quality pitching. I mean, as a Yankees fan, Tanaka, I mean, I'm kind of impressed with him. I mean, he hasn't been lights out by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, the guy doesn't walk anybody. When he does reach a little bit of adversity, he reaches down and he gets, you know, moves on from it and keeps his team in the game. And that's, you can't complain about that. And, you know, as long as you don't walk people and put people on base, you know, with the base on balls, you got a pretty good shot at winning most of your games. I definitely am, impressed with him so far. What could you say about Mike Trout? Definitely saying he's the best player in baseball. Josh Hamilton, what he jammed his thumb. Mm. He would look like he was ready to, with the Angels, ready to have a monster season. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. You know, I think so far, you know, it's really tough to tell at this juncture. I mean, right now we're talking and we're raving about the Brewers, and then, you know, all it takes is a 6 or 7 game losing streak, or, you know, 6 or 7. You know, and then it's a long season. So you have to, you know, I can't really say I see any trends yet. Maybe in about a month or so, you kind of get a better idea of, you know, the haves and the haves nots.
Right.
But
yeah. No, it's definitely early to talk about that. No, it's definitely early to talk about that right now. But the only team with double digit wins right now is the Brewers at 10-2, and the team with the most losses, Kirk Gibson's Arizona Diamondbacks, are 4-11. They're 1-8 at home, and they're -32 in run differential. Ugh, that's dreadful. But with no Corbin, who obviously is out for the year, that's a big loss for them and their pitching on their staff. So I'm not surprised at that. But we'll be back in a couple weeks to talk more baseball. Joel Barnhart will return, and 2 more weeks of games, and we'll see how things are. What do you think about the NFL draft situation? We're coming up on that soon. The draft starts May 8th through the 10th. We'll get more in depth on it in a couple weeks. Roger Morissette, Andy Flanagan will join us. We'll talk a little NFL draft, as it'll be on our off week when the draft actually happens. But we talked about the Giants. Talked about the Cowboys. Any missing pieces for your team after free agency is now over? Anything you're looking at right now as the draft edges closer?
I still think that they need to. I still think they need to look at the offensive line. I think they need to shore up the tight end position a little bit. They don't really have a lot of money right now to play with. I think they did a good job in the free agent market. I think they definitely shored up the defensive line as well as the offensive line. One thing I have to say is that I do trust Jerry Reese, because, yeah, all right, we've had a couple of, you know, 4 out of 5 seasons not making the playoffs. But, you know, in between all that, you got 2 Super Bowl wins. And I'll take not making the playoffs a few years in a row to have a few Super Bowls. So
right.
I trust that he knows what he's doing. I'm confident that the key thing is protecting Eli. I know he had ankle surgery. Clean up the ankle. He should be ready by the OTAs. And I just really, really like the fact that they went out and they did something. They spent some money. I think if you could protect Eli, he'll go back to having a great season like he did a few years ago. Victor Cruz, you know, one of the best receivers in football. We talked about it this before on the show. It's amazing how the running game has just totally, you know, that
vanished.
Used to be the key focal, especially for the Giants. That's always been the Giants' bread and butter.
Right.
You know, always having a great running game, having that great defense. That's why it was so weird, you know, before last season, you know, just the Giants being, you know, always throwing the ball in the air and, you know, racking up lots of yards. You know, they were always the type of team that, you know, controlled the clock, ran the ball. So it does definitely make it for some excitement. But I think, I think age caught up with them. They may have to make a tough decision on guys like Tuck. I think, you know, it was not easy. I don't think it was easy parting ways, But I think, you know, in order for the team to move on, they needed to make a difference and shore up, especially that offensive and defensive line. What do you, I mean, you know, I think they did a pretty decent job. I would give them a B for free agencies this year. What would you say?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, the Cowboys need – I mean, their running situation's a little – it's more the defense for the Cowboys. I mean, obviously, DeMarcus Ware is gone. They got a couple of signings, but they need to shore up a still porous secondary. I mean, they had the worst defense in the history of the universe last year. So, but we'll talk more about the draft in a couple weeks. We'll be joined by Raj and the Flannan Man to talk the draft preview. And then we'll actually do a post-draft because I'm looking at the schedule, and that Sunday, the next time we record, will be the weekend the draft ends. So we'll have a good recap as well. Speaking of, let's get some news. Look at this. Alden Smith, defensive end slash linebacker for the 49ers, who's always been troubled anyway. Did you hear this? LAX police arrested him at the airport today after he indicated he was in possession of a bomb.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. He was booked Sunday afternoon, according to LAPD Sergeant Michael Fox. Really? Like Alex Keene? No. they're disappointed to learn of the incident. Pending legal matter, they have nothing to say. According to L.A. Public Information Officer Carla Ortiz, the incident happened as the man later identified as Smith was going through Terminal 1 screening and was randomly selected for secondary screening. He became belligerent and uncooperative, making a comment indicating that he was in possession of a bomb.
That was belligerent.
Genius. Yeah, that was genius. Obviously, Alden Smith's had issues. In November, Smith pleaded guilty to three felony counts of illegal possession of an assault weapon stemming from an incident at a party at his house back in 2012. He missed five games last year while spending time in an alcohol treatment center after he was busted for driving drunk twice since 2012. Despite that, he finished with 12 sacks, 34 tackles, and got to the NFC Championship game. But he's facing charges for both the arrest for the incident at his home and the drunk driving. He could get league discipline for this because Roger Goodell loves shaking all these guys down. So maybe the Niners might be thinking.
And then, of course, got this discipline. Yeah, he's going to be probably going to jail.
Yeah, and now we also have the Niners aren't out of the woods with a lot of their guys. They still have this Colin Kaepernick sexual assault situation. That's a mess out there in San Francisco. And then you got issues apparently with the players and Jim Harbaugh. They're not getting along. They're kind of tired of his shtick. So a lot of things as they're opening a new stadium this fall, which is where WrestleMania 31 is next year. So a lot of issues in San Francisco with the players and with the coach. So we'll keep tabs on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of turmoil going there. I mean, listen, Harbaugh would get a job in 2 seconds. You know, if another team was looking for a coach or looking to get rid of a current coach, so that's not an issue there. But the NFL itself, that's one of the black eyes. It's just, it's always something. It's like every week there's some player in trouble for something. And it's not good. It's not good for the league. I mean, we all keep spending the money, and the league keeps making all that kinds of money. But
right.
They have to crack down on that kind of stuff. They really do, because it's just a detriment to the game. And it's just amazing to me, you know. Listen, I'm not saying I'm a saint.
Do you think Goodell's been harsh? Do you think he's been kind of heavy-handed since he's been commissioner? Or do you think he's been fine?
He's been heavy-handed when he needs to be. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with. These guys need, I mean, it's a shame they're adults, but they need to be, you know, they're representing a league, and it's also, you know, sometimes they're putting not only themselves at danger, but others at danger.
Right.
And that stuff shouldn't be taken lightly. And you know, listen, people make mistakes, and that's fine. And you try to help them as best as you can. And if you put them in rehab or whatever you need to do to help them. But if they keep repeatedly making that mistake, then it's like they got to want to help themselves. And if they don't want to help themselves, you know, listen, there's only so much you could do, but there's also has to be consequences for your actions. And I don't have any problems with that. What do you think? I mean, are you a good Goodell fan?
I like Goodell. I do. I think he's a little mafioso. He's got that kind of, you know, he's got his crew with him. But, you know, these guys need to be disciplined. I mean, it's the number one watched sport in America on television. They make the most money. And I think there needs to be – look, they get ignored for steroids, and you're telling me that, 70% of the league probably has guys taking it.
Well, you know, that's the aggravating thing for me, and I'm a big NFL fan, but I'm also a big MLB fan, and listen, I think it's a problem in all sports. But why is the government and, you know, everyone always looking at Major League Baseball for all these problems with steroids and everything? And you're telling me that in the NFL that's not happening. It is happening. And the thing is in that sport, it's a contact sport. That's even more dangerous. There's a lot of side effects of steroids. You know, people have problems with anger problems. What do they call it? Roid rage, I guess. And you could kill someone.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that's something that's a problem. But it's like the NFL, like Teflon, nothing phases it. They can just keep getting away with it. I understand that people take, Major League Baseball records as being very sacred more than all the other sports, and that's why it's been such a problem. But that shouldn't be the reason why. I mean, you're dealing with people's livelihood here, especially that you could conceivably critically injure somebody or at the worst, kill someone.
Right. So it's, I mean, they probably get... they're under the microscope more than the other sports. But I've had no problem with the way completely that Roger Goodell's been running things. I think a lot of people think he heavy-handed the Saints, but others think that he did the right thing. And it's all an opinion that is, it's split, obviously. But one opinion that is not split between the doctor and I is our next two guests are awesome. All right, when we come back, we'll have our next guest. And that is my brother and Place to Be Nation basketball analyst, Chris Criscolo. He will join us to talk about his beloved UConn Huskies and winning the national championship last week, as well as the college basketball season in general. Then later on, Todd Gessling will join us. We'll talk the NHL playoffs, which start this week. And then the doctor and his prescription. All that and more coming up on Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Watch the world die. We can lift us out the ocean. Leave the fire behind. What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture. Whatever's on your mind, too, we'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here. PlaceToBeNation.com.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Yo. Could I get a cold beverage? I need some leverage. A sweaty ass as a lemonade would be nice. Stop a spice from the top to a BK. Got a bar, got a drink, but girls got the bait on the front board. Yeah, I got some ice tea. If you like a taste of tea, then come along with me. Summer but time is demon, don't give me no buzz. Splash some ice and a dash of a mess, martini time. Yeah, yeah, feeling old and bring your own.
Welcome back to Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'm Scott Wisdom, of course, with Doc. On this very nice weekend in the Northeast, weather is beautiful, as we talked about in segment one. A lot of sports to talk about, as a lot of things are ending and many things are beginning. One thing that has ended is the college basketball season. It ended on, technically, both genders ended earlier in the week. And it was a double for the second time in 10 years. The Criscolo household is smiling. And joining me and the doctor tonight is a guy who is making his Place to Be Nation debut outside of the Place to Be podcast. For those that have been listening to us since the beginning, he has been on each of the four March Madness previews. In 2011, he correctly predicted that Kemba would do 11-11 or whatever and won the national championship. He didn't pick him this year. He could care less because he's happy anyway. Place to Be Nation's college basketball and golf analyst, my brother, Chris Criscolo. Welcome to the Extra Point.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
All right. Let's, overall, your thoughts on the college basketball season in general, dating back to October when you were at Barclays, the same night I was watching the UConn football team get throttled by Teddy Bridgewater in Louisville. You were at Barclays watching the guys beat Maryland. From that point until the night that they were coronated in Dallas, what were your overall thoughts on this 2013-2014 college basketball season?
Well, there were a number of things this year that made this season different from the past. They made changes, rule changes that said college basketball had become too defensive and that physical play was ruining the game. So they put a rule in to allow freedom of movement and hand checking was no longer going to be allowed. It was allowing the defensive players to really get up in the point guard, the guard's face to, face guard. And with that, freedom of movement allowed, the guards to have more court space. And so that was a change that happened. Now, the season started off with that big Champions Classic where you had four of the biggest programs in Michigan State, Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke. Michigan State beat Kentucky and Kansas beat Duke. And there were a number of the big freshmen playing in that game, Andrew Wiggins for Kansas and Jabari Parker for Duke, as well as the five heralded freshmen from Kentucky who, ended up making it all the way to the championship game. So that was how the season pretty much started. And then after that, it became the story of Wichita State, who went through the Missouri Valley Conference, which is, as we know, considered a mid-major conference, finished the regular season and their conference tournament undefeated and went into the NCAA tournament, where I think, as we all had thought, that the competition that they had played might be something that they would have to worry about, and it turned out that they fell in the Sweet 16. You had other conference realignment, the American Athletic Conference, where UConn ended up, as well as the other Big East non-football playing schools, I should say. So you had a conference realignment there. You had Pittsburgh and Notre Dame and Syracuse moving into the ACC. You had other teams moving into the Big Ten and the Big 12. One of the other issues is you had a lot of big seniors that came back for their senior season, such as Doug McDermott, who could have gone into the NBA. He ended up scoring over 3,000 points and finishing, I believe, third on the all-time list of college basketball scorers.
Yeah, third.
So there were a number of big storylines this year. There was some coaching issues. A few coaches were actually ejected for demeanor on court, including Kevin Ollie, who was thrown out of a game against Louisville at Gamble Pavilion, which if you happen to see the game, on a terrible call where Neil Giffey was fouled shooting a three and actually got pushed into the bench. The foul was actually hard enough. No foul was called, and Ollie actually stepped on the court, and Mike Stewart ejected him. So that was one that was I actually got a good look at. But there were others, including Fran McCaffrey from Iowa was also tossed out of a game.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then, of course, there was the Jim Boeheim incident against Duke when C.J. Fair was called for charge, which I thought was a terrible call. Wow. And in fact, it was probably a game-changing call as well.
Now, we all know that at that point in the season, you know, the ACC people were probably thinking, well, outsider, you've already beat up our teams for 3 months. You have to get a little home cooking.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I
then
think.
I guess the big off court issue was the Marcus Smart situation in Oklahoma State where he went into the crowd and actually pushed a fan at Texas Tech and was suspended for 3 games, which Oklahoma State went into a tailspin at that point, but managed to right the ship and made it into the tournament. So those were kind of the storylines for the college basketball season outside of the play, as well as Arizona. You know, played well. There are a number of teams that moved up and down in the top 10, but pretty much you could say that, you know, Louisville, you know, Syracuse started 25-0, and then they kind of fell off. You know, Arizona was one of those teams that probably would be considered one of the best teams at the end of the year, and we all know that they lost, you know, they gave up a lead late in that Elite Eight game against Wisconsin. But that's kind of you know, some of the top headlines of the basketball season.
Now, Chris, I mean, you know, going back to UConn, did you really think going into the tournament that UConn? I mean, I know how you feel as a fan, but you know, as an analyst, did you really think that they had a shot at winning the whole thing going into it?
Well, I had done a little bit of a preview, and if Scott goes back and digs into his email, he'll see that I think I predicted a Sweet 16 for them at the beginning of the season. But when the tournament started, I mean, I knew they had the talent, but after getting throttled by Louisville by 33 points, I was concerned. But Louisville has the kind of team that Connecticut does not play well against, and they were really hot at that time, Louisville was. So I wasn't thinking that they were going to make a run to the Elite Eight, Final Four at all. I thought they could. I thought they'd get to the championship game of the AAC tournament, which they did. I thought they could beat Memphis because I thought they played a game that Memphis Memphis didn't match up well with them. I thought the Cincinnati, if they get it to the Friday night semifinal game, was going to be an old school Big East rock fight, which it turned out to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought that they were experienced enough to win that game. But I thought if Louisville made it to the final, that was going to be another tough game. They actually played a lot better. And that game was actually gave me some hope because they did hang around and played much better than they did in that last game of the regular season. So heading into the tournament, I thought if they could get a decent seed and had a decent draw, that they'd have a chance. And when I saw the bracket come out, and they were going to in the East region with Villanova as a second round game. I says, wow. I says, they got a chance to get to the Garden. And if they get to the Garden, watch out. And it turns out the toughest game that they had, if you think about it, was the St. Joe's game. And they were 30 seconds away from walking out losing. And Amita Brima gets an offensive rebound putback and an N1 overtime. And then Connecticut's free throw shooting gets them by there that game. And, you know, off they go. I thought Villanova was overrated all season. I actually thought the Big East Conference in general was overrated all season. So once you get to the Garden, you know, the Garden is a home, basically a home away from home for Connecticut. And even though the games were tough there, certainly against Iowa State and Michigan State, I thought the home crowd really was a factor. And then once you get out of the regional and you're into the Final Four, at that point, you just, you know, it's gravy at that point. They were underdogs in every game. But, you know, Shabazz Napier's got to be considered. Well, I think he was considered. I think he was the best point guard in the country, as winning the Bob Cousy Award will show. Mm-hmm. But he's got to go down now. And I thought Kemba Walker had the greatest season in UConn history. I don't think there's any doubt that Shabazz Napier's topped it. But I didn't think that they could win the whole thing at the beginning of the season.
It's amazing. And, you know, they almost after they got past St. Joe's, almost like they played, you know what, with house money. We're not favored to go. You know, they were the underdog in every game, and they didn't play with any pressure on them, it seems like. And like you said, that home crowd advantage definitely, especially in a place like the Garden, definitely gets them juiced up.
Well, I've noticed, and I don't know if you guys do, but I think a lot of these big time teams who have a lot of high expectations if you don't have leaderships, senior leadership, people, players, that students, athletes that have been around and have experience, I think that they tend to shrink in the big moments. I mean, look at teams like Arizona. A lot of that team was mostly underclassmen. I mean, Aaron Gordon was a freshman. Nick Johnson's a junior. Not a lot of experience. You know, they were the best team all season, I thought. And, you know, they couldn't survive a tough game. They had some bad possessions against Wisconsin, and it cost them. Florida, okay, would be the one team you'd think, well, then there you go. The team has been to multiple Elite Eights, all seniors, a bunch of pros on that team, but they don't shoot the ball from the outside very well. And they actually shrank in the big moment. I think experience is a big thing when it comes to these tournament games, and a lot of teams that don't have it end up coming up short. And I think that the expectation is too high. And when you're playing with house money, you just go out there and play ball, and you can use that us against the world mentality, which Connecticut was able to do. They were underdogs in every game. All of the pundits and analysts across the board, CBS Sports and ESPN and everybody, no one picked Connecticut at all. In fact, all of the big names were picking them to lose to St. Joe's in the first game. So when you don't have expectations, you just go out there and roll the balls out.
One of the other big things this season, Big Brother, was parity. I mean, by the end of the season, we were talking about two seeds with nine losses. And there were a lot. I mean, look at Kentucky. Look at who you played on Monday night. It's a team that had 10 losses, losing games to, like, Arkansas and South Carolina. I mean, I love Frank Martin, but they sucked this year. They were terrible. And teams turned it on, but there was a lot of parity. Number one, I mean, other than Syracuse, teams were getting bounced all over the place. Duke was losing crappy games. What do you think was the genesis of that this year? There were a lot of teams who historically, over the last 10 years, don't lose games to bad teams. And this year, almost all top 10, top 15 teams lost bad games this year, except obviously Syracuse. Well, Syracuse did some at the end of the year. Wichita State obviously didn't lose any. What do you think that was the cause of that?
Well, I just think there's a lot. I think there's just a lot better talent. I think there are much better high school athletes coming out that are really good basketball players. And all of these five-star McDonald's All-Americans, you know, which to me is really a farce. I mean, a lot of these players come in and they're heralded and they play up to that potential, like Wiggins and Parker. But look at the five kids from Kentucky. I mean, Kentucky rolls out six McDonald's All-Americans every year. Last year they lost in the first round of the NIT to Robert Morris. So there's a lot of talent below that five-star level that comes into these other schools who know they can't get the big names but still are able to recruit good players. And there's a lot of size and there's a lot of skill out there. And, you know, it's the big schools aren't just the ones that are getting good players anymore. There's just a lot of talent out there that's spread across. And, you know, I think there's also a lot of good coaching, and some of these lesser tiered schools basically go out there with the, you know, a mentality that, hey, we can hang around here. And, you know, as you know, Scott, you walk up to the big dog and you punch him in the mouth. Sometimes they don't come back hard and they say, wow, you know, we're in a game here. And they don't live up to the moment. So I just think there's a lot of talent from the high school level that's being brought in, and a lot of the big schools, I mean, they can't take everybody. So some of the smaller schools, lesser schools, are getting good talent, which allows them to compete against the big time schools.
I think it's great for college basketball, actually. I think it adds another element, and it's not just the same teams every year. Give it a shot. I mean, listen, I didn't think UConn had a shot at all. And, you know, it made for an exciting, exciting tournament this year, and especially for UConn fans, and also having the women do the same thing. You know, the women you kind of expect it from almost. But the men, you know, from year to year, you just never know. And, you know, like you said, playing with house money, it was exciting. I know it just seemed there was a buzz around the state, you know, living in Connecticut. And, you know, I think it was fun all around. I think it was a great college basketball season this year.
Yeah, the thing about the women's game versus the men's game is there isn't a lot of talent around in the girls' high school ranks. And all the top players, they want to go to five schools: Connecticut, Duke, Tennessee, Stanford, and Notre Dame. Those are the five schools. that all that the big high school girls want to go to. They're calling Gino Auriemma. They're calling Muffet McGraw. They're calling Tara Vanderveer. You know, so there isn't a lot of talent. I mean, at the end of the beginning of the women's season, you could probably name five or six schools that are going to be in the Elite Eight. And if you, because they get all the talent. There's a big difference between the one problem I'm having with college basketball, and unfortunately, you know, and Connecticut was a beneficiary of it, is the regular season is starting to mean very little.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
A perfect example is, I mean, you play 1,000 games. There's 10,000 games on every night. They go through all these conference regular seasons, and all it takes is a team to just get really hot in a conference tournament and in the NCAA tournament, and you go on and win the whole thing. So it kind of takes away. I don't know. No one's going to dispute that Connecticut wasn't the best team on paper. They certainly didn't have the best talent. I think everybody would agree that Florida probably had the best team on paper, but the best team on paper doesn't always, you know, that's why they have to play the game.
Exactly.
But starting to make the regular season, I think, a little less important, and nobody really pays attention except the true basketball fan during the regular season. Tournament's when everybody hangs around, but I think that's one thing that college basketball is losing is the fact that its regular season is starting to become less important.
This is what I think.
What do you think, Chris? What do you think would make the regular, help make the regular season more exciting? I mean, it's a tough thing because the tournament is obviously, bread and butter in terms of, you know, ratings, money. But I mean, I agree with you. Sometimes it does get a little watered down. And again, all it takes is one team to get hot like Connecticut did to win it all. Not to say that Connecticut didn't have great talent, because they did. Obviously, they showed it in the championship game and throughout the tournament. But what do you think is what would be a suggestion you would make?
Let me interject. Let me throw this at you, Chris. What do you think? You win the regular season championship, you get the automatic bid.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And then
I think
in the tournament, if you win your conference tournament. Depending, because how many conferences are there? I mean, well, here's the weird part, because this is where you have to separate the mid-majors and the power conferences. Because I'm thinking if you win the regular season, you get the bid. If you win your conference tournament, you're guaranteed a top four seed. You don't know where or what, but you're guaranteed to be no lower than fourth. But the problem is then you got mid-majors. You'd have to make, like, you know, Iona a four seed or Fairfield or something, which would be totally stupid. So that's the only problem you have there.
Yeah, I don't know how you would handle conference tournaments. I actually think conference tournaments should probably be done away with. Go by your regular season, and that's how you roll, and then you pick the tournament from there. You know, obviously your regular season champs get automatic bids, and then you go at large, everybody after that. And then you sit down and you pick the 37, because I think there's 37 at-larges that get picked. So that's what what's that? 36, what are there? 68. So, 31, conference champions and 37 at large. You pick 31 regular season champs. They all get automatic bids. And then you have 37 at large. You pick the next 37 best teams. Period.
Simple
I think conference
enough.
Tournaments should go away. I mean, they're exciting. We love to watch them. Championship week, all of that. But I think they cause a lot of the grief that we have. Now, of course, you're taking away the, you know, the Cinderellas that win tournaments at, you know, like the Mercers and the Florida Gulf Coasts and, you know, teams from even the MAC, you know, Fairfield, you know, and other schools like that. You know, you take away that is one of the things you lose. But I think you should take regular season champions and then the next 37 best teams.
Three guys.
You know, I agree with you on that. You know, the thing is, obviously, we know it's not going to happen because of, you know, TV ratings and the conferences.
Conference tournaments make big money. I mean, the Garden makes big money when a big – well, not anymore, but they used to make big money.
Right.
You know, the Bark – you know, so you're not going to lose that because the schools make a lot of money, the conferences make a lot of money, and the arenas make a lot of money.
But, you know, it is kind of, you know, when you think about the schools, a team, you know, wins their conference – and then they still have to go through a tournament. And like you said, you get a team in your conference that gets hot and you lose your conference tournament. And then it hurts you for your, you know, seeding in the tournament. Yeah, I mean, I hate to use the word not fair because that's not really the right terminology for it. But, It does kind of suck that you played hard all year, won your conference, and you still have to go on and play a tournament to, you know, to prove that you're the best in the conference after a long season.
Yeah, it's almost like a conference champion ends up getting more publicity, you know, more media attention than the regular season champ does, and I don't think that's right. I mean, they've gone through the January through March, the 3 month run of regular season games, and come out with the best record. But the tournament champion is the one that always seems to get all the true. Press.
I want to talk about three guys, Chris, that played this season. One had been in college already, and two were freshmen. That's obviously Doug McDermott, who you mentioned earlier, Andrew Wiggins at Kansas, and you know what? His name just flew out of my head. Freshman for Duke.
Jabari Parker,
thank you. The two of them, Wiggins and Parker, could have skipped college and gone to the NBA. McDermott, as you said, could have skipped this year. All three of them went to school. All three of them had very disappointing ends to their season and might have been exposed a little bit. Jabari Parker looked horrible in the loss to Mercer in the tournament. And here's a guy who was expecting to be maybe a top five pick. I think he might have got hurt by that. Wiggins had an up and down season, as did Kansas, and they ended up losing in the tournament as well. And he didn't have a great tournament. And then McDermott, and I was with you, we watched the Big East tournament final against Providence, and the Friars beat the snot out of him. Sure, he's shooting 27-foot jumpers, but in the NBA, that's only going to take you so far. He didn't like being touched. He probably should have played in the ACC. He didn't like being touched. He looked very uncomfortable trying to battle rebounds and that kind of thing, and he's got the size for it. And then, regional or the second round of the tournament, or third round, depending on your point of view, they got absolutely obliterated by Baylor. Did these three guys hurt their draft status with the ends to their seasons?
No, I really don't think so. I think NBA general managers and scouts don't look at performances on a big stage when it comes to the NBA. You got to remember these kids are 18, 19 years old. McDermott played, he was probably, the most experienced, played on a team where basically it was him and I forget the other big tall guy they had that shot threes for Creighton. He didn't have a lot of talent around him. Well, obviously Duke, Kansas, and Kentucky had talent, but I don't think Wiggins and Parker's NBA status will change much. I mean, Wiggins is projected to be number one pick. Parker's probably top five, although he hasn't actually officially declared. I don't know what Krzyzewski would be telling him. I mean, well, I don't think another year at Duke is going to do him any good. So he might as well go now. I think Kansas could have been better if Embiid actually played. That hurt Wiggins because they were able to key on him defensively. And if you didn't have the big guy underneath, to kind of offset inside-outside games. But I don't think that those guys are going to suffer in the NBA because of what happened in the tournament. I don't think GMs and NBA guys look at how they finish their seasons. I think they just look at skill level versus, if they had a bad game in the tournament.
All right. If you had to pick your preseason top, I'm not going to do a full one. Five. Give me your preseason top five when the season starts in October.
Preseason top five, I think you have to look at Arizona as probably, and I'm not going to say which of these teams are going to be it's just five teams that I think are going to be in the top next year. Obviously Duke, with all the guys they have coming in next year, Tyus Jones and Jahlil Okafor are certainly going to help Suleiman and Emile Jefferson in that group. And then, Arizona. I think Connecticut's going to have a decent team next year if Daniels comes back, but I wouldn't think they're top five. They might be top 10, top 15. I mean, Wisconsin's got a bunch of guys come back, including Jaminski. Kansas has got a big class coming in. Seldon will be back. I don't think Embiid and Wiggins will come back. And they have got, two of the top players, ESPN 100, Cliff Alexander and Oubre coming in. Florida certainly is going to have a lot of guys coming back. And actually, I think Carolina will probably be pretty good next year. But those would, I would think right now, and that's before guys actually have declared yet, I think would be the top five coming in next year.
All right. Well, we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about your other love that ended the day. This is where your spring ends, and now you can start watching the Yankees. And that is the 2014 Masters, which concluded a little while ago. And Bubba Watson wins his second green jacket in 3 years, winning by three shots over Jordan Spieth. Right? Is that how you pronounce it? Spieth?
Spieth. That's Spieth. Correct, yes.
What were your thoughts on Bubba's play this weekend?
Well, Bubba has the perfect game for Augusta National. I mean, he hits the ball a mile. He's a lefty. And he hits a cut shot, which for a lefty would be, you know, for a right-hander is a hook. For a lefty, it's a slice. They call it a cut. And a lot of the fairways and tee shots and green approach shots at Augusta are, which for right-handers would be draws. For him, he hits that cut and he can hit that shot and he hits it a mile and he's got great hands around the green. He's got the perfect game for Augusta, and this isn't going to be his last green jacket. I can tell you that right now. I wouldn't be surprised if he won four or five. He may not be able to win at the Open because the greens are as narrow as a driveway, because he doesn't hit it straight all the time. He needs wide fairways, and Augusta has wide fairways. But his play was spectacular, and he's not going to crumble on the back nine. You know, Spieth had a two-shot lead after he birdied the sixth hole. And then he bogeyed 8-9, and Watson birdied 8-9, and it went from a two-shot lead to being even, or maybe it was a one-shot lead to Watson being ahead at the turn. And then Spieth hit his ball in Race Creek on 12, and he made a great up-and-down even safe double. But at that point, it was a three-shot lead for Watson, and he basically walked to the clubhouse from there. But Watson was fantastic, and he's going to be around. As long as he's got his swing down, he'll always contend at Augusta.
Where is the Open?
The Open this year is at Pinehurst, number two.
Ah, down in Kakalaki, Jason Greenhouse territory.
I mean, the tournament this year, you know, was a little bit weak because you had a lot of big names out. Garcia didn't make the cut. Els didn't make the cut. Woods didn't play. Mickelson missed the cut. Graham McDowell missed the cut. Henrik Stenson missed the cut. A lot of big names weren't around for the weekend, so I'm sure the TV ratings weren't great, but the guys who were around, you know, Watson and Spieth and Kuchar and Miguel Angel Jimenez, the golf was good, but it just lacked what Augusta normally has on Sunday, which is some drama. I mean, the last, you know, hour and a half of the telecast today was basically Watson just, you know, hitting shots and walking up fairways. I mean, it was over.
It's kind of like Rory in the PGA two years ago.
Whistling Straits, yep.
Yeah. All right, well, big brother, it's been a pleasure, and thank you, and thank you for being able to get on even through the technical difficulties. Maybe we'll have you back on right before Pinehurst. Maybe we'll do a quick little U.S. Open preview.
And, it'll be interesting to see if Woods gets back in time for that because, you know, he with his back issues, he may make the tournament, he may not, but we always know how good the U.S. Open is, and you've got to hit it straight, and you've got to be able to putt because that's that's the way the U.S. Open is. But it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
All right. When we come back on PTBN's Extra Point, Todd Gessling will join us. We'll preview the 2014 Stanley Cup playoffs. Place to be Nation's Extra Point, back after this.
This night will never end. Lord knows that I'm weak. Won't somebody give me off of this ring?
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today. Boneheads!
Points. Welcome back. I am Scott Criscolo, joined, of course, by the doctor, George Avellino. I thank my brother, Chris Criscolo, for joining us. Apologize for the technical difficulties. He had some issues, but he at least we were able to get him on. We appreciate your patience, listeners, and hope you enjoy this segment. Another thing that ended today, besides the Masters and earlier in the week, the tournament, the NHL regular season ended today, Sunday, as we're taping, and the NHL playoffs will be upon us this week. And joining us is PlaceToBeNation.com's official hockey writer. He's official everything. The guy's awesome. He's a little depressed. One of his Missouri boys got kicked off the team earlier this week. I might ask you about that. But he's also one of our best college basketball guys, but we're going to talk about his hockey expertise. The pride of Mizzou, Mr. Todd Gessling. Todd, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. And let's talk about your boy at Missouri. Kind of an itchy situation there. What do you think about it?
You know, Gary Pinkel, the head coach at Missouri, he's very serious about honoring the core values that he sets up for his players in that program. He's always been known as a, you know, very high moral ground type guy. You know, DGB, Doro Green Beckham, the wide receiver that was dismissed from the team, was the number one recruit in the nation when he came to Mizzou in 2012. A lot of potential. I think that he hadn't really fully put it together on the field yet, and this was supposed to be his really big breakout year. But when you come to something as serious as the domestic abuse allegations that were kind of floating around, you can read the 19-page police report online. Coupled with the fact that he'd already been arrested twice in 18 months before that, I think you really got no choice but to cut him loose. Otherwise, you're letting the inmates run the asylum. The unfortunate thing is that he's 20 and he's kind of flushing a lot of his opportunity down the drain. But I suspect he'll go to FCS school so he doesn't have to sit out and then enter the draft next year. But I think from the university standpoint, they didn't have any choice but to let him go. Hmm.
Quick thoughts on the college basketball season. We just had my brother on. Obviously, UConn winning the national championship on Monday. Your thoughts on the overview of the season in general, some thoughts and observations you had about the season as a whole?
A lot of people are going to say that this was a really rough college basketball season to watch because of the officiating. But I think we saw by the time the tournament came around, teams are slowly starting to adjust these new rules. College basketball to me was almost unwatchable outside of your favorite teams the past 5 years or so, because it was becoming football. It was just a bunch of guys hacking and charging and knocking each other over, when I think basketball is a game of speed and finesse and skill, like what you see in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So this year was kind of rough to watch at times. I mean, as a Mizzou fan, I kind of checked out a little early. But the tournament was, you know, outstanding. I don't think you could have asked for anything cooler than, I believe it was, 7-8 in your national championship game.
Yeah.
All kinds of star power. Julius Randle, Shabazz Napier, big-time programs like Florida, UConn, and Kentucky running deep. I thought it was amazing. Amazing tournament, lots of great memories, and a pretty good season by the final whistle.
Mm. Okay. All right.
You know, we were talking, Todd, about with Scott's brother in the other segment that, you know, what would make it better, you know, because it seems like, you know, the tournament is where everybody really, is more excited about it. The regular season sometimes almost gets forgotten. You know, we were talking about, like, with the conference champions almost want get all the, accolades more than the actual, you know, division winners, you know, when they win, you know, with the best record for the season. And then, you know, they go into the tournament, and you get in the conference tournament, you get a team that's hot. And you kind of like all that hard work you did for that 3 months kind of, you know, if you wind up, losing one of those games in that tournament and somebody else wins the conference, it almost kind of takes the wind out of their sails. So Chris was saying he thinks that we should do away with the conference tournaments, which, you know, that's not going to happen due with the ratings, you know, TV ratings money and all that stuff. So, we were wondering what you think about it. What do you think about that would make more college basketball more exciting for you? Or what would you do if you had free reign right now?
Well, I think the biggest issue, and this would be its own whole podcast on its own because it's so complicated,
yeah, sure.
is the NBA deal, you know, should you require players to waste? I mean, I look at a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who was clearly having his eyes on the NBA the minute he stepped on the floor at Kansas. You know, should you let that guy just go sink or swim on his own accord in the NBA, or should you make a player like that stay at a school, even like Kansas doesn't really need him, but make him stay there for 3 years or whatever? You know, I think that's the biggest issue. As far as the conference tournaments, I think as a fan they're great because it's more basketball. And
right.
And some of them, like the Big 12, the old Big East, there's a lot of really intense heated rivalries and classic moments, and it's a really big spectacle. But, yeah, I agree. You know, from the team standpoint, you got to think, well, we just – if you win like the ACC or Big 12 or, you know, some of these really, really good leagues like the Big 10 – That's a pretty lofty accomplishment because it's not easy. You're playing a lot of really good teams night in and night out. And even as great as UConn was this year, you kind of saw the same thing, that a team just they got hot at the right time and won it all. Can you really say that they're the best team in the country if they played some of those teams, you know, 3 or 4 times in a row or had like a series? You know, I don't know. But it doesn't take away from their tournament win. But I think the two biggest things would be the conference tourney, but they got to do something soon about the one and done rule. Either stick with it or, I don't know what the solution is, but I think that's the biggest thing kind of hurting the game.
All right, we'll definitely have you back on to talk more about that when we get.
Yeah,
to...
I tell you, we probably could just do a podcast just on the state of college basketball and, you know, the good things and the bad things. Obviously, the actual, you know, NCAA tournament itself is very, very exciting. And you know, and it brings in the casual fans as well because of doing the office pools and stuff like that. And it does bring some excitement to it. But, yeah, I mean, you could talk about this stuff for hours upon hours and still not come up with an exact solution.
But we will go from the hardwood to the frozen pond. Let's talk about the 2013-2014 NHL season, which concluded earlier today, as we are recording on Sunday. What were your overall thoughts, Todd, on the season? Bruins won the President's Trophy, blowing on my fingernails as we speak, first time since 1990. General over thoughts on the season, the Olympics, do they help or hurt? What did you think? Just some general observations on the regular season.
I think this was a really important season for the NHL after the abomination that was last year where we were playing hockey, you know, and it was like 100 degrees outside in the summer and there's still playoff hockey going on. Just a really weird and just a mess of a season. I thought that it was, after that first lockout in like, what, 2004, I think, the game has been better than it's ever been on the ice. And I think that, yet again, the actual games themselves, NHL has done a good job of getting a lot faster. They've probably got more stars right now than they've had since, you know, the 90s or like the trail end of Gretzky's career. Their biggest issue and my biggest issue with the NHL is, and I wrote something about this on the website, is it's just too hard to watch. Like, literally, you can never find the freaking games, you know, unless you're living like in the Northeast. Like, I'm from Atlanta. And I live in Kansas City now. So either of those, Atlanta, we lost our team, and Kansas City, you just can't watch enough hockey here. I think the NHL has got to do something to get a better TV deal soon.
Yeah, there's way too much cable.
I agree.
There's way too much cable. I think they need to have a better streamline of TV programming. The NBC, the family of NBC networks just doesn't fly because a lot of people don't have NBC Sports Network. As I'm looking at the playoff bracket, there's games on CNBC. No one's going to remember that. I'm surprised they don't have games on Bravo or something. They need to – either CBS or ESPN needs to take back until NBC Sports Network's on all platforms, which I don't know if it is or not. It probably is because it did used to be – it was Versus, so it probably is. But a lot of people don't know where it is. It took forever for people to find CBS Sports Network. I think that's a major problem. What do you think about that? You think definitely changing the networks is a – changing the TV contract to a network that's more high profile is the right thing to do?
Well, they got to get somebody to offer them a better deal first, which is the problem, because you know, the NHL is not a very well-run business. No. You know, if we didn't have the Canadian teams and the international presence in the NHL, you know, they'd be hurting even worse. So yeah, they need a new TV deal, but it's not, you know, it's not their end. Somebody else is going to have to be willing to take them. I forgot to mention the Olympics. I think the Olympics are great. I can understand why teams might not like them taking place in such a critical part of the season. Right now, as we're talking a little bit about the playoffs, teams like Chicago and St. Louis are still feeling the effects of losing their guys from the Olympics. I loved watching the Olympics. I was really disappointed with Team USA's conclusion.
Oh, they fucked up big time.
But it's a great product to watch. I mean, it's like compared to the NHL, it's like you're playing a video game. You know, so much faster and just, you know, more rapid fire, just action going on nonstop. So I really like the actual on ice product in the Olympics. But I think that it does put a lot of NHL teams at an unfair disadvantage.
Hmm. All right. Let's delve in and talk the playoffs, which will start. I think the earliest game start on Wednesday, so there's 2 days of preparation, and then playoffs start in earnest on Wednesday. Let's go to the East. Now, the way it worked, for those that don't know, the way it worked is they took, because there's two divisions now in each conference, they took the top three teams in each division and then put the other teams all together and took the two best from there as wild cards, which I think is just – the NHL sometimes, I think, overthinks things. And they just do what they always did and just have the top eight and just move on. They should have just one big conference and screw the divisions. Unless you're going to bring back the Patrick, the Adams, the Smythe, the Norris. Those were cool. And make it the Wales Conference Trophy and the Ian Campbell Conference Trophy again. But the NHL screws that kind of crap up all the time. It's ridiculous. That's, again, another mini-podcast for another day. How terrible Gary Bettman is as a human being and a commissioner. All right, so the Bruins won the East regular season, won the overall regular season. They take on the Red Wings. Personally, as a Bruins fan, that series scares the crap out of me. The Lightning take on Montreal. The Penguins will face Columbus. Is this Columbus's first trip to the playoffs ever?
Second. They've been twice in 12 years.
I don't remember the other time.
2009, I believe.
Oh, was it? And then the Rangers, who we happily swept, or no, we beat them in five in the East Finals, take on the Flyers, who I despise. All right, what do you think? What series in this East intrigued you, Todd?
I think in this first round, the New York Rangers and Philly is going to be, if you're a fan of like old school hockey, that's going to be a brutal series to watch in a physicality sense. That's going to be two tough kind of old school teams going at it. I don't think either of them are legitimate threat to take the trophy, but it's going to be fun old school hockey to watch. And then I think the Tampa Bay and Montreal series will be kind of the inverse. It's going to be really fast, high scoring, got a lot of speed on both those teams. I think in the East, I think Boston is unquestionably the best team. Pittsburgh, I mean, they've got the best player in the world, so at any given moment, they can take a game or two, but I really think that Boston's head and shoulders above the rest.
Wow, you like that, Scotty, don't you?
I don't like all these accolades. I like being the underdog. I mean, it's nice to have the...
So just out of curiosity, before we go on, who's your favorite team?
Well, I was an Atlanta Thrashers fan, but when I left, I wanted to pick another Southern team, so Nashville Predators.
Ah, okay.
Didn't make the playoffs this year. Were you disappointed?
No, I mean, they still finished a little bit above 500. They've lost a lot the past couple of years, so they're just kind of rebuilding. But, no, I mean, overall, it sucks not making the playoffs, but wasn't a huge deal.
Hmm. What do you think of the Penguins? Here's a team that was so incredible last year. They had the most points in the East, and then the Bruins just made them look just – so mortal in the Eastern Conference Finals. They take on this Columbus team. You think there's a little payback here? Let's be honest. Fleury is a horrendous goalie, particularly in the clutch. They do have a lot of great scorers, and they're still a great talent offensively. Do you like their chances against Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, Columbus had a pretty good season. They've got Johansson, he kind of broke out this year. He's only 21, had his career high in points. Really good player on Columbus. And Columbus is a team where, unless you're in that area, you probably never watch him play. I think that they need to, you know, they should just be happy to be here for now. Pittsburgh, I think they just got too much firepower, especially because they're getting Malkin back from injury. I agree, there's problems in goal, but I think this should be a pretty one-sided series, to be honest.
Okay. So who do you like? So you like Pittsburgh to move on, and what do you think, and do you like Rangers or Flyers?
I'll take Rangers and seven in that one.
Mm, okay. And on the top, what do you like?
I'll give the Red Wings a game. So I'll do Boston in five, and then I'll do Montreal in six.
Okay. And then all right. So when all is said and done, who will be representing the East in the Stanley Cup Finals?
I think it'll be Boston and Pittsburgh, and I actually think Boston will have a tougher time with either Tampa Bay or Montreal than Pittsburgh, and I'll take Boston out of the East.
Oh, okay. All right. In the West, we've got a resurgence in Denver, Patrick Waugh, bringing that nastiness of his to Denver, and the Avalanche won the Central. They'll take on Minnesota, the Wild. The Blues will play the defending Stanley Cup champion, gnashing my teeth as I say that, Chicago Blackhawks. Anaheim Ducks will take on the Dallas Stars, and the Sharks will take on the LA Kings. I like that series too. What do you like? What series intrigued you of these four in the West?
I think there's two right off the bat. That San Jose and LA is a rematch from last year, and they don't like each other, so that's always fun to watch in hockey. St. Louis and Chicago is also interesting because both of those teams at points this year look to be on that same level as like Boston, as just one of the NHL's, you know, most elite teams. Both have struggled with injury, and right now St. Louis is hobbling into the playoffs. They've lost everybody. And then Chicago was finally getting back their two best players, Taze and Patrick Kane. I think that's also a pretty legitimate rivalry between the two, so that's always fun to watch early on. Colorado, great season. I did not expect them to go from worst to first, you know, almost literally. I do think that Minnesota is actually going to beat them. And then Anaheim, you know, they're at the top of the rankings, but you're always kind of wary of giving that number one a route to the finals, which is kind of how I felt about Boston. But I think Anaheim is really going to have a hard time with Los Angeles or San Jose in the next round.
Okay. So if you pick a team to face the Bruins in the Cup Finals out of the West, who would it be?
I'll actually go with Chicago.
You like a rematch?
Yeah.
I'd like a rematch, too, personally. I think the Bruins didn't have the legs by Game 6, and I think they ran out of gas, in my opinion. I don't think that's going to happen this year. Whether they win or not, again, remains to be seen. But I don't think the series will end for the Bruins the way it did last year in terms of just getting – they had nothing left in their legs. That's what I think happened.
I think the biggest thing for the Bruins this year is they're just so much bigger and tougher than a lot of these teams in the playoffs, that if people don't have somebody to deal with that size and that physicality the Bruins bring, they're going to have a really tough time. And I don't see a lot of teams this year that can go pound for pound with the Bruins.
Okay, so there you go. Bruins and Blackhawks from Todd. And I don't want to totally put you on the spot, and if you pick the Blackhawks, you will never come back. No, I'm only kidding. Go ahead. Who's your – no, I would never do that to you, Todd. You're one of my favorite people. All right. Back-to-back for the Hawks, or do the Bruins get redemption?
I think it'd be an awesome series. I'm going to take Boston just for some redemption. You know, Boston's been here, what, two of the last three Stanley Cups, and Chicago's been right up there too. But I just think Boston is too strong, and just they've just got too much size and strength for the NHL game. You know, it's smaller ice, and physicality is really important, especially in the playoffs. You kind of feel cautious given the President's Cup winner, the Stanley Cup, because that hardly ever happens. But sure, I think it's a year Boston can do it. And I'd go Boston.
Not another championship for Boston.
No, championship for me. Zip it.
Oh gosh, I can't take it.
But yeah, I agree with that. I am tired of Boston winning everything, but you know, we can't fault them for running their franchise as well. So
yeah, thank you, Todd, for that diplomatic answer.
Oh, go away.
Why don't you ask about your beloved team from the, you know where?
Well, I'm a Devils fan, Todd, and so a rough year this year. I think Brodeur. I think it's time for them to have to move on. It sounds like he's ready to move on. You know, he's saying that he wants to know exactly what he's going to do coming into a season, how many games he's going to be able to get into, and I think the Devils needed to try to give Schneider a chance, you know, to break in the role of goalie. It's tough because, you know, Brodeur is one of the greatest players of all time, but, you know, after a while, you just got to kind of move on to move your franchise ahead. What do you think? What do you see for the Devils? I mean, you can never count out Lou Lamoriello. I mean, he's one of the best GMs in hockey. Do you see the Devils moving on from Brodeur after this year?
Yeah, I think in hockey is a lot like, I think you still see this in baseball too, where you have legitimate heroes like Brodeur. In like the NBA and the NFL, you see legends bounce around all the time, you know, 3, 4, 5 teams. But hockey, you get players like Brodeur that they become, you know, the face of a franchise, and they kind of represent that franchise legend and history and culture. So it's tough to cut ties with them, even if you need to. I mean, look at what the Sabres had to do this year with Ryan Miller, the Rangers with Callahan. It's tough to, like, actually pull the trigger and cut those guys loose. But I think Schneider is a really, really talented, goalie. He's got a lot of potential. And at worst, he's better than Brodeur right now. And I think Brodeur's name alone, you'd probably get something for him, or, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be tough for the Devils. But I will say, how amazing is it that Jaromir Jagr is still playing at a pretty high level in the NHL at his age? I mean, that guy's never going to retire. But yeah, I'll say they got to get rid of Brodeur while they can.
Well, I believe he's a free agent, so I think he's probably just gonna. I'd love to just see him retire and just remain as a Devil for his whole career, but it sounds like he wants to still play. But it's a tough position. That's a tough position to play, you know, in your 40s. You know, I guess obviously like Jaromír Jágr, I don't know what he's what kind of juice he's taking, but wow, I can't believe he could still go. It looks like he's not ready to retire anytime soon. And I'm not implying that he's taking steroids. I'm just a
simple metaphor.
Just a metaphor. Just amazing. You know, it's that was one of my teams, you know, that I root for, that I was like, you know what, the Devils always just consistent. They were always in the playoffs. You never knew what they were going to do. You know, 2 years ago they were in the finals, which I didn't expect at all. I think it's time to start, you know, getting younger and moving the team into a different direction. And if anybody could do it, Lou Lamoriello can. But it's tough. It's tough to part ways because I love Brodeur, but you know, obviously his best days are behind him.
Well, you want to get rid of somebody, or, well, not get rid of them, but, you know, you want to part ways before things turn ugly. And either side, the Devils or Brodeur, turn against each other, or there's hard feelings, or, and it's difficult to do, but you definitely want to, you know, be ahead of the curve on that.
Right. Well, you know,
it's starting to get a little testy now, so I think it's time to. Yeah, probably the best for them to part ways. I mean, they're saying it's not out of the question that he become a Devil, remain a Devil, but I don't foresee it. I think they're going to want to start moving on and getting younger.
I agree, but I don't think there's any question you'll see a 30 hanging from the rock soon.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So, Todd, it has been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of the Extra Point. We'll be back. You'll come back soon. We'll have you back on in the spring. We talk spring football and college, because that's where you and I really do get fired up. So, Todd, thank you for joining us, and maybe we'll have you back for the talk a little NHL playoffs. We're gonna have you back because we love you, Todd. So, Thanks for joining us. Have a good week, Tom.
All right. Thanks, guys.
When we come back, Doctor, prescription time. Devils suck. I'm trying to get you all pissed off. The Doctor's prescription is coming up next here on Place to Be Nation's Extra.
Go Red Wings.
We'll be back. Stereo, the way you move ain't fair, you know. Hey, so sister, I don't wanna miss a single thing you do tonight. Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net. Nation's Extra Point. I am Scott Criscolo, along with the Doctor, George Polino. We thank Chris Criscolo and Todd Gessling for joining us this week. Just a little preview on our next show in 2 weeks. We will talk more about Major League Baseball. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs, which will have started by then. And our big segment on that show will be Roger Morissette and Andy Flanagan will be joining us. And we'll have a little roundtable about the NFL draft, which will be 2 weeks after that, as the draft comes close. Where will Jadeveon Clowney go? Where will Johnny Manziel go? What will the Giants do? What will the Cowboys do? What will the Patriots do? Will the Texans trade that number one pick? All that coming up in 2 weeks on our next edition of PTBN's Extra Point. A lot of stuff. But it's time now to write a prescription, Dr. G. But we're going to do it a little differently this week. Usually I find a sports topic to piss you off. But I don't get to do this very often with you because you're so busy when the start of your week that you don't, you're usually out cold by like 8:30. I think your daughter stays up later than you sometimes. But you and I actually got to, it's true. You're usually, well, maybe not. Depends if the Yankees are on like they are on right now. Otherwise.
Oh yeah. When the Yankees are on, all bets are off.
But, you and I were joined by my PIC on the Place to Be podcast, Justin Rosero, Roger Morissette, your best friend, Dan McGinn, and Andy Flanagan, and the rest of the crew. We watched WrestleMania 30, almost said 300. God, I'll be alive for WrestleMania 300. No, WrestleMania 30 last Sunday at Boneheads. You did like the wings, didn't you? They were good. I told you.
The wings were very, were good. Very good. I actually really did have a good time. Now, I'm trying to think now. You and Justin call each other PICs. What the hell do we call each other? What is this?
BFFs? That's weird. Not like the Ben Morse, Jen Engel on Total Divas BFFs, but, you know.
Well, you're a diva sometimes, but that's okay.
Excuse me. What am I, like Elton? By the way, if you have SiriusXM, listen to the Billy Joel channel. It's awesome.
It is.
All right. So you and I don't get to watch pay-per-views live that often, but you did watch WrestleMania with us. And I know one thing pissed you off to no end, and that was, of course, the end of the streak, as The Undertaker finally lost to WrestleMania. But it wasn't the losing of the streak itself, because you've always said to me you were never an overly huge Taker fan. Not that you hated him, but you weren't into the whole, you know, his whole gimmick like most people are.
Right.
But you did get pretty pissed off. And actually, if you find the Place to Be Nation YouTube channel, there's a few video clips of us from that night at Boneheads. I think one of them is you going on your rant. So this, if you've watched it already, you may get it again, but you were not thrilled after the Undertaker and Brock Lesnar match.
I was not thrilled. You know why? I was never a big Brock Lesnar fan. I don't think the guy's that committed to the business.
The whole thing when he left the first time, the traveling is too much, and he's always bitching and complaining. And listen, I'm not saying it's an easy life. I'm not saying I could do it. But if you're going to go into this business and you're going to try to, and you want to become a world champion, you want to make all the money that you could make because you do have a great character, you have to be committed to it. You can't just be coming in every once in a while, and I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this in the WWE, these guys that come around for five times a year, making more money than the other guys who bust their asses all year long to put the best product they can on the air and just think that they could just come in and do whatever they want. I mean, you had – first of all, I don't understand, even if Taker said yes to it, supposedly there's rumors that Vince kind of talked Taker into it, and Taker is very loyal to the company, and I give him a lot of credit. But what was the sense of breaking the streak? I really don't understand it. Why couldn't you keep it as a record, kind of like that record of the 56-game hitting streak? Or, you know, yes, we know that wrestling's scripted and everything like that, but still, are you going to see the longevity of somebody like Undertaker being in, you know, 22, 23 wrestling? You know what I'm saying? I don't see is this going to really advance Brock's character that much? Is that going to help the WWE make that much more money? Brock will probably be 3 months. You probably won't even hear from him anymore. I just don't think he's committed enough to business. I don't think that was the right person to do it. And I didn't see a reason why they were doing it. It made no sense to me. And it's just amazing to me. You know, I understand that everyone knew that Daniel Bryan was going to win that night. They had no choice. That was going to be it. That's what the fans wanted. So maybe they wanted to add some element of surprise to the event. That could be it. I just don't get it. I don't see what it's going to do for the WWE to make the WWE that much better. And yes, I know all you Paul Heyman fans out there that, you know, just are so in love with him. And, you know, I loved ECW and I think what he did for ECW is great. But maybe I'm in the minority and I'll take it because I'm usually in the minority because I really care less, to be honest with you. I can't take the guy. I can't take his voice. Shut the hell up. All you're doing is yelling and screaming every 5 seconds. Oh, this mastermind that he is. I'm tired of it. Honestly, he just doesn't do anything for me anymore. And Brock Lesnar, to me, is not the guy that's going to take the WWE to the next level. Sorry. Does he have the potential? Yes. But is he committed enough? No. And that's where I have a problem. That's it. That's how I feel.
Sign it.
So if you really have a problem, if you want to talk to me about that, or just give a little response to that, or you agree with me, disagree with me, it's extrapoint@placetobenation.com.
Yep.
extrapoint@placetobenation.com. Love to hear from you, honestly, because I, you know, not about all the topics we talk about, any sports topics, wrestling, but that's how I feel. I know I'm probably in the minority on this. And that's fine. And I know you probably disagree with me. And
I'm more of a – look, I'm a little more diplomatic. I wait and see. I wait and see. Before I jump to conclusions – I was not a big fan of Brock beating him either. I would rather have seen – although people think I'm crazy, I'd rather have seen Punk do it last year. But then, of course, everyone's like, well, he left. Maybe he wouldn't have. Who knows? But I didn't like the decision either, but I'm going to hold judgment to see if they actually do something with it. So we'll see. But no, yeah, I was not happy with it either, but I'm not just going to do a blanket. It was a stupid thing to do. I'm going to wait and see what happens over the next 6 months.
I know our pal Johnny Reckless is a big Paul Heyman fan.
He is a huge Paul Heyman guy. Yes, he is.
And I'm not saying that he doesn't have a great mind for the business. Obviously can't run, not very good with balancing a checkbook, but hey, I'm not making any judgment. I don't think it's one of my high points either. But in terms of, you know, where he is now as a character, I don't know, he just grates on my nerves. He grated on my nerves when he took over for Lawler as an announcer. He drove me nuts. I don't know. It's just, after a while, it's just a little much. It just doesn't play well. You know, he doesn't play well like he did in ECW. It was a different, ECW was just a different feel, different way of doing things. I think in the PG rated WWE, just doesn't do it for me. that's it. You know, that's how I feel. And it's a shame to see that streak come to an end like that. Listen, if Undertaker, I respect the guy because he is one of the most loyal guys the company has ever had. And I think Vince always tries to do the right thing by him, but I disagree with this one. I really do. I don't see it going anywhere. So we'll see. Maybe you guys in 3-4 months, you could be saying, George, you're wrong, and Brock Lesnar becomes the biggest heel in the history of the business. But I doubt that's going to happen.
You know who's a big heel? You, for no selling the creeping death wing at Boneheads.
Oh, please. I've eaten
hot. By the way, always thanks to Matt at Boneheads. He's always a great host.
Yeah, Matt was awesome. Matt's a great guy. He tried to get me a wing at the end of the night with the what's the one that
Creeping
with
Death. Hell's Bells.
Hell's Bells.
And then he gave you a dip of the Creeping Death. But you need to eat a full Creeping Death wing.
The place was closed, so he put a – let me tell you something. Next time we go the Place to Be Nation, guys, I'll do 6 of them. How about that?
Really?
I will do 6 Hell's Bells. I'll do 6 of them.
No, Creeping Deaths. You ate a Hell's Bells and you no-sold it. But no, 6 Creeping Deaths.
Mm. Oh, okay. I'm confused. You got me.
Creeping Deaths are the hot ones.
They tasted on the stick.
No, that was Creeping Death. You had a Hell's Bells and you no-sold it.
All right.
So you were going to get – all right. Well, you heard it here on Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. The doctor said he's going to do 6 Creeping Deaths the next time he goes to Boneheads, which will be in 2037. So,
you know, no, I'm biatch. Let me tell you right. Like, listen, I really, really. The one thing I'm so excited about is having our email address up. I really want to hear from everyone. I want to hear. Listen, agree, disagree. Just want to say hi. Whatever.
Yeah, please. Yep. Input is great. ExtraPoint@placetobenation.com, and we'll let you know how the Creeping Death goes. But we'll let you know ahead of time when the doctor will be back in the Ocean State. It has been a pleasure, Doctor, as always. In case you're wondering, the great cowboy Roger Morissette, not available tonight, so we could not get an MMA blitz, but he said it was a quiet time anyway. But he will be with us big time on our next episode of The Extra Point. Roger and Andy Flanagan, fellow Giants fan, Dr. G, will be joining us, previewing the 2014 NFL Draft, which will be 2 weeks after that, May 8th, 9th, 10th, I think it is. And also joining us next week, Andrew Reich, because we never hear enough of him, to give us a preview of the NBA playoffs, which will already be about a week old, but we'll still give some analysis and see what the future holds for the playoffs.
We're going to have maybe like a little grudge match between you and Reich, I think.
In terms of what?
I think you guys need a hardcore.
Well, Reich will be joining me this coming week on Place to Be Nation's main event.
I mean, he does talk fast, but still.
He was in Nolens last week. He was in the building when all the confetti fell and the streak ended. But that'll be on this coming week, Place to Be Nation's main event. All right, Doctor, it's been a pleasure. For Chris Criscolo.
The pleasure's all yours, as always.
Okay, Larry Zbysko. Where's your Larry? Georgie Land? You're going to get a Georgie Land t-shirt? Is it going to have the Wonder Wheel and the Cyclone on it? Did the Coney Island Coney Island open today, right? Coney Island open
today. Yes, it did.
You were in Brooklyn today.
You could see from the highway. You could see the Wonder Wheel going. Nice. It was awesome.
Yep, and then the Cyclones and all the our awesome Major League Baseball, minor league baseball season start. Some started now. Others started in a couple weeks, right? Or June is when the 9th pen starts. That's all our teams. The Cyclones, the Staten Island Yankees. Everybody gets going. Connecticut Tigers. All right. For Chris Criscolo, Todd Gessling, and the Doctor, this is Scott Criscolo. You just hit the extra point. You're the best, fans. Extra point at placetobenation.com. Hop on. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
See you, folks. I'd point that shit straight at the sky and shoot heaven on down for you, because the bars are always open and the time is always right. And if God's good word goes unspoken, the music goes all night and it goes. I want a lover, but I can't find the time. I want a reason, but I can't find a rhyme. And I want to start some static, but I can't afford to slam with the ground like I fall off my skateboard. Hey, nowadays, it's clear as you please. Get strapped with protection, I'll strap with disease. Laughter, it's free. Anytime, just call me. 439-0116. When you die with sublime, you get funky, fresh. Land. I'll chase out of the bar. I saw my best.
gonna run, come down with the new lyrics. Get hip, don't slip. Your knuckleheads, races on his skis. I'm on a serious tip. You don't believe me, then I go and bust your lip. Higher the mountain, it hard to climb. Rougher the rhythm, man, it must be sublime. Listen, you're the lover, yet him right on time. We got cricket with the quickness and the bass line. Bass line. Go and raid the town and tell the people the news. Oh, hey, tell them reggae music is on the loose. Here I am, from like a raging storm with a brand new style and a unique fashion. And good goodbyes, they keep on playing, playing.
Fire one shot for PC quality. Come, come, them a come with the rougher style. Come, come, me not care about your wicked style. Come, come, if you come with the wicked style. Them a fire one shot, pump, pump with the shot. Them a fire two shot, pump, pump, lick a shot. Them a fire three shot, pump, pump, lick a shot. Me not care about me rock,
rock, rock, rock.
Me no stop counter react me where they am. People are launch, them attack me where they am. Me no stop counter react me. Bigger, he make up it to you about this wicked style. He make up it to you about this wicked style.